fermented into MAGA world, which is kind of where it is now.
Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News. Listen weekdays 5 to 9 a.m. News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Here are some of the highlights of what Councilman Moore and I will be bringing forward. There will be a $1,000 application fee for application seeking removal of one or more 40-plus inch live oak trees.
You know, you heard David mentioning it in the top of the hour news there that D.C. Reeves is working with Councilman Jared Moore on some changes to the heritage tree or tree removal ordinance, all of that cluster of things, especially after winning those awards for the city. And so he talked the other day about some of the details on what they're thinking about in terms of making it, well, incentivizing people to keep their trees, protect their trees, and or if they are going to be removed, doing more to facilitate the, you know, rejuvenation of them when they plant replacements.
There will be inch-for-inch replacement requirements. There will be updated mitigation fees. That's already been discussed in the LDC item, the $1,500, going from the $400 to the $1,500. We're going to further modify that.
Okay, so heftier costs, essentially, to do the mitigation, and also the requirement that, you know, if you remove 40 inches of trees, you got to plant 40 inches of trees. But then the breakup of how you do those tree replantings is actually kind of important.
We're increasing the residential mitigation cap. If you're removing live oaks up to either 3,000, and by the time we hit, we may even go to 5,000 there.
So if you're removing a cluster of trees from a property in order to create a house, the total amount of money you might be susceptible to repaying into the tree planting trust fund or paying into the tree planting replanting trust fund, moving that up to 3,000 or possibly even 5,000, because I think it's 1,000 or 1,500 right now, I believe. And, you know, who cares? I mean, if you're developing a property and it's a $400,000 or $500,000 home, $1,000 to, you know, pay for trees you want to remove is like no penalty at all, right? So always when you're talking about whether fines or incentives or replacements, you always want to make the penalty, make it make sense. I mean, make it actually affect behavior or at least influence judgment so you get the end result and you don't just say, oh, well, you know, we made them do something and what you wind up making them do was very much nothing at all.
We're giving clarification on protected tree retention credits, and we're requesting expanded uses of the tree planting trust fund, including reasonable staffing, professional services, and all of that. Right now, it's very limited when it was put together way back when.
Pause it for a second, because what he's saying is the things that you can use the tree planting trust fund to pay for is too limited. He wants to allow the tree planting or replanting trust fund to be used services related to tree planting. So some people might criticize that as, well, you're using it to pay people instead of using it to plant trees. His answer is, you don't understand. We need to have these people, and the more we have available to pay them, that gives us a better opportunity to do a better job, a wiser job of replanting these trees. Now, this is a policy conversation. We're going to have it. This is not an over and done with. This is just proposals. And right now, it's not even proposals. It's sort of broad strokes. But that's kind of the issue. I just wanted, before we finish the rest of the clip, wanted you to understand the context.
Together way back when. But ultimately, if you want to have a good, solid tree ordinance and tree protections, someone has to administer those. So in essence, what has been discussed before not only isn't modern for today's demand and for the protection of our oak trees specifically, our live oak trees, but also it's really been an unfunded mandate for many years. It's been there's money coming in for mitigation dollars coming in for replantings, but we're at the point now with so many requests for permits, for all sorts of things, not just penalties, not just mitigation costs, but just day-to-day reviews that have to take place. I mean, we're reaching the point where we need multiple staff members to be able to take that on.
And it only makes sense that the funds coming in to operate the program for replanting trees when they get taken down would also fund the staff who operate that program. And as we're saying, there's so many permits and so much necessity that's why he's proposing it.
I think the most painful losses that we take in tree canopy in the city of Pensacola are these significant heritage beyond the definition that's in the code. I mean, when we just talk person to person, the truly heritage trees that have been here 100 plus years, those are the painful ones to lose. So we want there to be, if someone's going to apply for that, we certainly want there to be intentionality and need to be in there. And frankly, I don't feel like the existing ordinance as it is delineates need and want.
And politically, right? You know, people don't get upset about a bunch of trees that don't look nice. They do get upset about a, you know, big, beautiful heritage oak tree. Well, if that's what people are concerned about, even if that's not a big portion of the overall tree canopy, well, then let's make our code deal with that.
We have to ensure that if someone's making a decision to cut down one of these precious trees that make our city special, it's the parks we go to, it's Seville Square, it's some of our historic neighborhoods, lots of our neighborhoods.
Right, and that's kind of what makes this city what it is, and every time one of those trees goes away, it feels like a painful loss. And he spent some time talking about the respect for private property, and people have the right to do with their property within boundaries what they want. And that's, of course, another element of this conversation is, you know, if you love the trees, we'll buy the land that they sit on. And if somebody else buys that land, then the tree belongs to them. But there's also a recognition built into all of these tree protection ordinances, and especially the heritage tree ordinances, that there's something more than just owning the land that you owe to the community who enjoys and benefits from not just the aesthetics, but the, you know, the water handling and the air processing and the shade provided by some of these big trees.
This specific area, oak trees 40 inches and larger, while that's a much smaller percentage in the grand scheme of our entire city's tree canopy, I think that's where we all feel the pain, the significant ratio of pain, right? Of we don't want to see these taken down. We want to make sure that if they are taken down, it's done thoughtfully and it's done by need.
And meaning that it is really properly incentivized and you're making sure people aren't taking them down too easily, that they really think about the necessity or non-necessity of taking them down, planning around them if possible, as opposed to just giving lip service to having, well, we tried and we couldn't figure out a way to do it. Because, you know, sometimes the rule includes a portion that says if you, you know, you can't take down a tree unless the building you're going to build necessitates it. Well, I mean, could you have built a slightly different building and not having to take down the tree? Was that the easier, the harder way out? Those are all questions that come up in these conversations.
The reason the application fee is higher is our staff is going to spend significantly more time on a 48-inch oak tree than they are on a crepe myrtle somewhere, right? I mean, so there's true actual administrative costs to taking down a tree like that. Staff costs, time, all of that. It's just more complex than many of the other trees on there.
So raising just the application fee to $1,000 sounds like it's punitive, and it might be in the sense of trying to make sure people are really thoughtful about this and that they want to do it, but it's also just, hey, the staff is going to work really hard to protect those big old trees, and, you know, $1,000 starts to cover the staff time. It probably does not cover the total staff time, but it starts to cover the staff time on those kind of trees. And so, obviously, if, you know, in order to figure out if there's a way to save them or work around them, and, you know, you should have to pay for that since you're the one proposing to take them out.
If a very small fraction of our tree canopy causes 95% or more of our concern as citizens, as lifelong residents here, then let's be intentional about it. So that's how we're modernizing it.
Right. That's, again, making sure that the trees people really care about are heavily protected, or at least protected in such a way that there's a lot of incentive to protect them. You know, and if they're not, if people don't really care about these other kind of trees, well, then, you know, why worry about them so much? And this was the part that actually caught my attention, just because I thought it was an interesting insight into particular changes they're looking to make in the replanting efforts based on what seems like just a simple math problem, but actually has a lot to do with how quickly you regrow significant trees.
But one modernization we're making is instead of this 3-inch tree rule, so 36-inch tree gets cut down, you have to plant, currently in code, you have to plant 12 3-inch trees. We want to give the flexibility and increase the tree canopy faster by saying you can actually plant up to a 6-inch tree. So you can plant 12 threes or you can plant 6 sixes. You can't go higher than 6 because we're worried about it actually taking. And you know, and so on our arborist expert opinion, we're saying, hey, we're not gonna give you credit for, you know, replanting a huge tree that we are fearful won't last a year or 2 years. So you can go up to six. So what does that mean? If you put a 6-inch tree in the ground, we actually have the math on this, that will give you canopy years sooner than a 3-inch tree would, right? And that's the whole idea. What we're asking you to replant the trees so we can recoup the canopy, right?
Replanting larger trees, let's say 12-inch trees, won't solve your problem because they're not as likely to survive. They're too big to replant. The smaller trees, it takes them several years even to get to, like a 3 to get to a 6 takes a long time. And so if you plant 12 threes, it's going to take you lots of extra time to ever get to a larger tree. Starting with sixes makes more sense. See, that kind of numerical analysis makes sense to me. I would even ask, and I don't know the answer to this, I'm just suggesting, that it would be worth looking at questions of, you know, are we talking about circumference? Are we talking about diameter? I think we're talking about circumference. That's what makes the most sense to me. And if we're talking about circumference, then replacement ought not to be circumference. Replacement ought to be, maybe total diameter. Or because, the relationship to the size of the tree is different then. There's a lot more to come. This is just an overview that he gave the other day in his press conference on Wednesday about kind of what they're looking at, sort of a preamble to the conversation, which will be much more policy-oriented, I think, and detailed than this. But I was encouraged by hearing this because I love the trees. I love the canopy. I love the water processing. I love the beauty of it. And I do think that, especially for the heritage oaks, the live oaks, that's something that makes this city what it is. 520 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Had a chance to go out to the base yesterday and talk with Blue Angels, the boss, one, Captain Brian, and also number six, Goldilocks. His call sign's Goldie. His last name is Locks. And also Stephanie Pugh, who was the key influencer ride that they did. And one thing, so we'll play those interviews for you later on in the show. But Channel 3, it's interesting how, I'll do an interview with somebody and then Channel 3 will do an interview with somebody, and we get sort of the same information, but it's just a little bit different. And I thought that actually the way Boss answered the question about what took place with the low-altitude flyby on Wednesday was actually just a little bit more poignant than the way he told it to me, even though it was very similar. Here's what he said to Channel 3.
Take a heavy look, and we've been taking a heavy look at yesterday to ensure that we are doing things first and foremost safe. The pilot found himself, unfortunately, in a situation that we would deem unsafe over the beach. We never intend to fly over the crowd that low, and we'll heavily debrief it, ensure that, one, we continue on with safe flight demonstrations, and then we learn from those different things that happen for this team.
And all of that is, of course, accurate. They debrief every time. They debrief extra, when anything goes awry or is out of standard. And, you shouldn't be going that low and over the crowd, of course, right. There's been a lot of conversation, we've talked about this a lot yesterday, about that incident and what people think of it. And I do want to say this, that I've had several of my sort of aviation friends basically say, I know people love that. I know people are celebrating. I know everybody thinks it's fantastic. And there's a truth to that. But at the same time, as somebody said, all of the safety protocols that anybody in aviation operates by are written in blood because bad things happen when they didn't follow those protocols. And though it seems like exciting when it doesn't actually hurt anybody, that close to really dangerous is what happens right before something that really does hurt people, and people have died in air show mishaps, and so that's why we have these rules. These rules are written for a reason. I get that. I'm still sort of basically on the side that says, but man, that was awesome. And I think that's what the vast majority of people here think, and of course what those folks say is, I understand, but look, safety is crucial, vital, essential, and the conversation around this would have been very different if it had really gone badly, which it did not. But if it had, and it was really close to going badly, well, that's, that's why the conversation. Also, Pete Hegseth, I think after the show yesterday, put out Secretary of War, whatever else I might think about him, various things that he has done. Did have the right commentary, I thought, yesterday. It was just after the show. He said, the flyovers will continue until morale improves. So we're done here. And then the Secretary of the Navy, SecNav, actually put out a comment yesterday as well where he said, this is Hung Cao, he said, flight debrief complete, no reprimands, no firings, no problem. That's the sound of freedom. Semper Fi and hooyah. So There you go. 524 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. If you have a lock you need unlocked, if you have a lock you need replaced or repaired, you have a fob on your car that you damaged or you swam with or you washed or you broke or you didn't have two when you bought the car and you wanted to have two, go to Ace Unlocks. They do this stuff all the time. Now, the name makes it sound like what they do is unlock cars. And that's true. Okay, they've been doing that since 1998 at UWF. They started that. But ever since, they've been doing all kinds of other things related to locks as well, including installing locks, like if your house just needs to be rekeyed or needs like key pad locks or app-based locks because you want to let the, you know, the pool person or the gardener or the maid or the, you know, I don't know, the cook, the babysitter, whoever might come into your house at different times, you can give them an app to get into the house. Like, they do all that stuff. They can program fobs for your car. They have all the same equipment that the dealers have, and they do not charge you the same amount of money. So I've got a fob from Ace Unlocks from several years ago. So I absolutely endorse them and believe in them, and I like Chris. He's the owner of the place. Anyway, if you need anything related to locks, 24 hours a day at airport and the railroad tracks, 505-7545.
Point.
Hey, you okay? You don't normally miss those shots.
Oh, I just haven't been as regular lately, and it's making me feel sluggish.
You should try Metamucil. It's been a game changer for me. Metamucil's plant-based psyllium fiber helps trap and remove the waste that weighs you down.
Ace!
You're moving better than you were last week.
Definitely.
Metamucil keeps you moving. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Learn more at Metamucil.com.
Hey, this is Dr. Ben McMillan. I do a show on the Pensacola Expert Panel. We talk about your health problems.
Let me educate you about the Activator method of adjusting, which offers a safe and effective alternative to traditional manual adjustments. So whether you've been hurt in a car accident or been suffering from back or neck pain, chiropractic care could be your solution and not just a temporary fix.
Join me this morning on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer at a beverage manufacturing plant, he starts his day knowing every line is ready to run. Because Grainger delivers the industrial-grade products he needs to keep mixers, conveyors, and packaging equipment moving. With Grainger's vast selection of bearings, belts, and motors, he keeps operations running smoothly, so nothing grinds to a halt. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know, sometimes you want answers.
Sometimes you just want something upbeat.
Either way, Meg's got you covered. Pet Talk, weekdays at 9 on News Radio 92.3.
Maverick, you just did an incredibly brave thing. What you should have done was land your plane. You don't own that plane, the taxpayers do.
Good morning, 527 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. It is air show day today and tomorrow. I've always thought it was weird that we do 2 days of the same thing, but we only call it the air show the one day. Like, it's the exact same thing both days, but, you know, today is the dress rehearsal and tomorrow's the air show. I don't know why. I don't know who made that decision a long time ago, but so it is. In any case, you know, today we'll be carrying the narrator for the Blue Angels live. That's going to be from 2 to, you know, 2:45-ish, something like that. So you can tune in here on News Radio. If you're going out on your boat, you're going to be out on the beach. You can catch us on your radio or on your phone, streaming, whatever. That's going to be Ronnie Hafeza, call sign Downey. He's the narrator. So that'll be today. And then tomorrow, all of the Civilian Acts narrations, performances starting at 10:30, I think, is when we're going to start covering this. And then that'll go through the water break, through 2 o'clock, through 2:45. So we'll be carrying that all day tomorrow for you if you're attending the beach air show. And if you're avoiding the beach like the plague, well, I understand those. There are many of you, too. Every year we hear from people who are like, I wouldn't go near that beach in the next 2 days if you paid me $1,000. I understand. I do. I understand. Those of us who love it and love going there, and then those of us who are like, no, I can see the Blue Angels any day of the week if I just go out to the base. And that's true. That's true. Oh, we did have yesterday when I was out at the base interviewing Blue Angels and, you know, sitting on the flight line and watching. It's kind of cool. One thing, just a small note, is we do have a C-130 that the Blue Angels are using. Remember the report that Bert was in for major maintenance, you know, backbone surgery, basically. And that's true. But we have a loaner. The Marines have loaned us. We always call the replacement Ernie. Get it? So a big gray C-130. That does not fly the demonstration. You will not see Ernie flying overhead because, you know, flying the high-intensity maneuvers put stress on the airframe, and it's like, you know, you don't fast drive your buddy's loaner car. I mean, maybe you do, but they're good stewards of their friends' vehicles. So, you know, the Marines loaned it to the Blue Angels, and you don't drive it in aggressive ways the way you might drive it if it were your own car. Also, the base, when we were leaving yesterday, very briefly, was on lockdown. Like, maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes. How do I know? I got caught in the out traffic. We were on our way out. We had gotten all the way to the back gate, and there was about 15 cars there waiting. And I was like, what's going on? And then I talked to Brent Lane, who was with me out there as well from Cat Country 98.7. And he's like, bro, I don't know. I just saw a car. Somebody was pulled over. Base police had him with guns drawn. I'm like, oh. Well, you know, sometimes people go in the gate and kind of misunderstand the instructions, and they're told to go this way to the visitor control center, and they wind up going that way or whatever. It was one of those things. And they have to treat it like it's a threat, but, you know, it wasn't. So it was over pretty quickly, and they let us, you know, leave and let everybody else come in. But, you know, for about 10 or 15 minutes, we didn't know if it was going to be a 10-minute interruption or a, you know, a three-hour interruption. It was a short one. No big deal. Base doing what it's supposed to do.
Fox News, I'm Gianna Gelosi. President Trump addressed the nation last night.
President Trump said in his White House remarks, as the midterms approach, he claimed the security of America's elections have been under attack.
January 2020 to June 2026. This is a cyber threat aimed at the very heart of our democracy.
Documents now on the White House website or what he says proves this. But Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said Trump's plan was to cast doubt in voters' minds before November.
Fox's Grinnell Scott, wildfire smoke from Canada spreading across the U.S.
All the way from the Great Lakes, even out as far as New England, and in a number of major cities today, air quality readings surged to levels so dangerous that one public health expert said nobody should be outside.
Fox's Kevin Cork, America's listening to Fox News.
KPD's Mike Woods says when Marshall's... Good morning, it's 5:31 at News Radio 92.3, and right now we've got 76 degrees. It is partly cloudy on this Friday morning. Looks like it'll be a beautiful day for the Red, White, and Blues air show if you're headed out that direction this afternoon. Well, the U.S. Navy, of course, saying no Blue Angels pilots are going to be reprimanded or fired after the Breakfast with the Blues flyover event earlier this week on Pensacola Beach. Video showed the flyover sending sand, chairs, and tents flying as the F-18 Hornet passed over the crowd. Navy officials say they've completed a safety review and acknowledge the maneuver was a bit lower than standard, but said that no pilots will be reprimanded for that. Onlookers at Breakfast with the Blues called it a thrilling maneuver. Well, a 10-year-old boy reported missing in Escambia County has been found safe. Deputies say Azariah Kingston Adams had last been seen Tuesday on Pensacola Boulevard. He's now been located safely, and the sheriff's office confirms that he is safe. Well, the investigation into the July 5th Palafox shooting that killed 19-year-old Philip Shepard Jr. took a dramatic turn on Thursday. PPD said the suspect they were seeking is dead after an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound during a warrant service at the Oakwood Terrace Apartments.
So officers from the Pensacola Police Department, the state attorney's office, and the U.S. Marshal's office went to Truman Arms, or the former Truman Arms, to serve a murder warrant on an individual there for the homicide that occurred on Palafox or off of Palafox last week. Before they were able to enter, several shots were fired from inside the apartment. A robot was put in the apartment to go look around. After the shots were fired, there was no further movement, and they discovered that the individual they were looking for that had the warrant was deceased.
And U.S. Marshals knocked on the apartment door announcing they had a warrant for 20-year-old Trevon Bradley. They say a woman and a child inside were allowed to leave safely. Bradley was told to surrender. A remote-controlled camera was sent in after multiple shots were heard in the apartment. confirming that Bradley had died of an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound. No law enforcement officers fired a shot, and Mike Wood says nobody else was hurt. PPD did say false information circulated on social media claiming officers shot Bradley, and that is simply not true. The bigger investigation into that shooting continues. Nicholas Stafford was denied bond, and a 16-year-old who allegedly supplied the firearm is being tried as an adult. Now, Bay Bluffs Park in Pensacola finally moving forward after a funding delay. Mayor D.C. Reeves says the city's expecting to finalize a contract with HDR in the next 2 weeks for a detailed structural and geotechnical assessment of the boardwalk.
We should be under contract with HDR for site surveying, a further detailed structural assessment and some geotechnical work within the next 2 weeks there. Once the contract is finalized, HDR will mobilize to conduct a detailed structural assessment of the boardwalk and the related infrastructure.
And that work could begin as soon as August 1st. Mayor Reeves says the full assessment process will take about 6 months. 5:35 at News Radio 92.3. And let's get a look at our forecast for today. We are currently at 76 degrees with partly cloudy skies, 77 in Milton, 80 in Gulf Breeze. Our next news at 6 and breaking news anytime it happens. News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with your money now. Netflix shares fell more than 8% after the company forecast third quarter revenue and earnings that fell short of Wall Street targets and said it would cut the frequency of viewing hours reports as the company seeks new avenues of growth. The company said it expects nearly $12.9 billion in revenue from July through September. LSEG analysts had forecast $13 billion. Chinese President Xi Jinping said China will provide developing countries with 5,000 AI training and seminar opportunities over the next 5 years. Xi also called for a people-centered approach to AI governance and said AI should remain secure and controllable, while warning against putting one country's security above others. Asian tech stocks once again tumbled this morning as a fresh rout in U.S. semiconductor shares spread across Asia, underscoring growing worries about AI spending. Shares of SoftBank dropped 9.2%, while chip equipment maker Tokyo Electron lost 9%. Advantest slid 9.4%. Futures are sharply lower. That's your money now.
Finding a roofing company is sort of like looking for a car wash. They're everywhere. Finding the right one? Well, that's easy. Just call FFS Roofing and Construction, a roofing company that's locally owned and operated that specializes in shingle roofs, metal roofs, TPO roofs, and so much more. They've been helping build Northwest Florida for over 20 years. So if you need a new roof, a re-roof, or roof repairs, save your time and money. Call FFS Roofing and Construction, 850-857-8799.
When it comes to precious metals, there's only one place to consider, and that's Emerald Coast Coins. They're the local leader in dealing with coins and jewelry, gold, silver, diamonds, and sterling silver. Emerald Coast Coins buys, sells, and trades. And for the past 15 years, customers from all over the Gulf Coast have trusted Emerald Coast Coins for the best estimates and prices in town. Stop in today. Emerald Coast Coins on Creighton Road.
You recognize the smell of marijuana, but it's not just a smell. It's a warning. If you can smell it, harmful chemicals are entering your lungs, bloodstream, and brain, and our children too. Every inhale affects brain development and triples the risk of serious respiratory issues. Protect your kids and grandkids from the dangers of marijuana. Their future is on the line. This message is sponsored by the Department of Children and Families and the Florida Association of Broadcasters.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us today at 9:30 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Planning your vacation? Why not take Pep Talk with Meg with you?
A vacation? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I can't wait to go. Okay, where are we going to go first?
No, take News Radio along via the app.
Oh.
Just go to your app store, search News Radio 92.3, download the app.
Okay.
And listen to Pensacola's news leader with crystal clarity wherever you go.
And it's absolutely free.
That'll work.
Get it now and tap the app to get News Radio 92.3, no matter where in the world you are.
We announced on Monday, 16-year-old Kanye Walker has been charged with handing the gun to Nicholas Stafford. Nicholas was denied bond yesterday for his role in this incident. As you saw in testimony provided by a detective on scene, the PJ's hands were in the air when he was right before he was killed. And the motive is something as petty as disrespect. There's no more impactful. There's no explanation that's going to make sense for the family of Philip Shepherd Jr.
That's Pensacola Police Chief Eric Winstrom speaking during the press conference with D.C. Reeves on Wednesday. And, you know, we're going to get more information about that. We've had a breaking news incident take place overnight as well, related to this July 5th early morning shooting. We'll talk about that here with Mike Wood. He is the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Mike, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning.
Before we get to what happened overnight, can we back up just a second and talk about that video that came out during the hearings over the people, at least the one person who is now the charge has been upgraded to attempted murder or murder. I find that my eyes do a terrible job of watching security video, especially when it's the bubble cam type where it's not like a regular scene. It's kind of distorted by the circularity of the lens. I had a hard time understanding what was happening in the video. Can you walk us through what the video shows?
Well, the case is still open. We still have another arrest that we're looking at. So I don't want to get into it too deep, but what I can tell you from the video is that we know for sure that the shot that came from Safford would not have been the fatal shot of Mr. Shepherd. So that's what we do know.
Okay, so it would not have, that would have either gone into the somewhere or into another victim, but it would not have been that exact shot.
That's correct.
So, but the charge was upgraded to attempted homicide. Is that right?
Yes, that was done at the state attorney level, because anytime you shoot a firearm into a crowd like that, that's exactly what it is.
Sure.
So they chose to upgrade that charge. And then the 16-year-old that was arrested is going to be tried as an adult. That was another upgrade there.
He's the one that the allegation is that he supplied the firearm to the first shooter.
Yes. So that makes him principal in the second degree. So you're just basically just as guilty as the person that fired the shot.
And then the after the fact is for the girlfriend who took the firearm allegedly away and then was tampering with evidence or accomplice or accomplice after the fact. Those are the three named arrestees so far, right?
Yes, sir.
And then one question about the video, just because, again, I don't trust my own eyes in interpreting these things, because I'm actually amazed that you guys do such a good job of understanding what the video does show, because I know my civilian eyes just don't see it so well. It looked like there was an initial shot from the attacker, and then you see somebody goes down, and then I thought it was actually at the more like the receiving end of the shooting, somebody was responding with what looked like five or six shots. Did I see this correctly?
Yeah, there was a lot going on there, and the person that went down may have been hit. That's still something that we're combing through. Like I said, this investigation is far from over.
But it was certainly a back and forth took place. Some of the details we're still not sure about, but it was definitely a back and forth firing, right?
Yeah. Know that the six individuals involved had a past that dates back a couple of years and simply didn't like each other.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Very good. And now overnight we've had a development, or early this morning we've had a development. Tell us what happened at the Oakwood Terrace, or it used to be called Truman Arms.
Yeah, so officers from the Pensacola Police Department, the State Attorney's Office, and the U.S. Marshal's Office went to Truman Arms, or the former Truman Arms, to serve a murder warrant on an individual there for the homicide that occurred on Palafox or off of Palafox last week. Before they were able to enter, several shots were fired from inside the apartment. A robot was put in the apartment to go look around. After the shots were fired, there was no further movement. And they discovered that the individual they were looking for that had the warrant was deceased. So it's important to know that none of the shots were fired by law enforcement. No law enforcement officers were hurt, and neither was anybody else at the apartment complex.
And I mean, were there other people? Do we know at this point? Because it's, you know, shots fired inside the apartment, multiple shots, multiple people. That's such a weird scenario. Was it a suicide? We don't know. Was it a gunfight between people? What do we think we know?
We're looking at that. So we hope to have more information out later this morning. There were other people in the apartment that were able to leave before the shots were fired. So we believe that he was in there alone. But again, we're still looking into this, and we'll have more information later this morning.
Is there any indication? I mean, again, do we know anything about whether he was shooting at you guys, at somebody else? Did he take his own life? Again, we just don't know.
Yeah, we don't believe he was shooting at law enforcement. You know, again, trying to get into the mind of somebody that simply does not want to go to prison, they are capable of doing anything, and we're fortunate that law enforcement wasn't hurt and the others in the apartment weren't hurt.
And this was, again, no law enforcement were engaged in the shooting. No law enforcement was hurt in the process. The only victim of any kind was the person that you were seeking to serve the warrant against in connection with the murder?
Yeah, that's correct. And there's already information on social media that's false that said police were involved in the shooting, and that's simply not true.
Well, I'm glad that you're, I mean, God, social media. If you want to know what lying looks like, just, you know, go on Facebook. Guess what? All the time. It's amazing and horrifying. Are you doing any identification of the person who's been shot? Is he a minor? Is he an adult? Do we know anything that we can say about that person?
I don't know. Again, we're going to make sure that the next of kin has been notified before we put any further information out on him, but that will come this morning.
All right, very good. We're talking to Mike Wood. He's the public information officer with the Pensacola Police Department. Again, early morning shooting this morning that the police did not fire any of the shots, but that one person is dead. The person who was a suspect in a warrant service related to the July 5th shooting in downtown Pensacola, and that's all we're able to say at the moment. Mike, I know that one of the things that the chief talked about yesterday, that D.C. talked about, Mayor Reeves talked about yesterday, was the gallery night upcoming tomorrow night. You know, we have Blue Angels weekend, we have gallery night, we have lots of crowds, and it's kind of funny. I would have never connected the two in my head because I just think of downtown as being a place you go, and every once in a while, a bad thing happens, but a bad thing can happen at a mall. A bad thing can happen at the grocery store. There's all kinds of, you know. So the notion that you would avoid downtown because of it wouldn't even cross my mind. Apparently, other people think differently than I do, which we know from me being on the air for 12 years. But tell me what the plan is for tomorrow night for gallery night.
Extra officers will be downtown for the foreseeable future in uniform, out of uniform, and officers that you can't even see. And basically what that means is looking through cameras. So we want people to go downtown and feel safe and be safe. It is a safe place, and we're going to go down there and do our jobs. And like you said, anything bad could happen anywhere. And, you know, it's much different if there's if it happens all the time, and that's simply not the case in downtown Pensacola.
You mean it's not Chicago here?
No, sir. not even close.
Not even remotely. As the sheriff had explained when I talked to him on Tuesday, he's like, you know that, like, crime and violent crime are way down in our area. Yeah, I mean, statistically, you know, it's extraordinarily safe to be here. I do have kind of a, I just want to hear from law enforcement kind of what your perspective is, because you know me. I mean, we've been friends a long time. I conceal carry, you know, everywhere I go when I'm out in the public, except when you go to the Navy base, because you can't carry there and can't go to school and even all the places you cannot go. But otherwise, so if I'm going to gallery night, I'm carrying. And I'm not going to a bar if I'm going. But if you go to a bar, you can't have a gun. It's important to know that. And you can't be drunk with a gun. So you got to know the rules. But if I go out in public, like if I'm going down to an event, I'm going to be carrying. So I assume that anybody who might be concerned or ordinary people are going to be carrying. And you, as law enforcement, know that that is their right. That is the law. That is the Constitution. But, you know, somebody bends over to pick up something they dropped and their gun gets exposed, or they're carrying openly, which is also legal now in the state of Florida. How do you react to that, especially given the fact that you're trying to make sure no bad people do bad things, but good people are allowed to carry both concealed and openly?
Well, the law is the law, and they're allowed to carry concealed. And if that happens, a lot of folks, especially after something like this happens, they will call us and let us know about it without remembering that this is the law. It's okay for them to do that. Officers will respond. They will see that nothing is taking place. It's illegal, and they'll move along. So, in fact, we've had a similar call like that already this morning. So that's just what we expect to have from people. People get a little bit alarmed, and they have to remember, though, that it is a right to carry that firearm, and the officers understand that. But they're still going to respond to any calls that they may get to make sure everything is okay.
And by the way, I mean, you correct me if I'm wrong, but if a police officer sees somebody with a gun in a public place or in a private place that does not have a posted prohibition against it, not a prohibited location, that's not even a justification for stopping somebody or asking them anything, because that's no probable cause whatsoever. There'd have to be other things going on for even the presence of a firearm to justify a police contact, right?
That's right. If somebody says that they just saw it on their waistband, that's one thing. But if they said that they pulled it, they held it, they threatened somebody with it, they're acting aggressively, they're acting intoxicated, anything like that means that we're going to investigate just a little bit further.
Yeah, and I mean, this is, I always like to remind people, it's just because it's the difficulty and complexity of being a law enforcement officer. You're trying to keep everybody safe from the bad people, but the good people are there too. And the good people have rights, and the good people do things that, you know, can be misunderstood by the ignorant. And it's your job to sort that stuff out every single day, over and over and over again, protecting people's rights while you're also protecting their safety. Let's see, what else? Oh, there was one other thing that I was going to ask you about. Actually, two things. One, you did a active shooter training at Workman Middle School maybe 2 weeks ago while I was on vacation. Was this a PPD only, or was this a multi-agency event?
Well, we were assisted by members of the University of Miami Gordon Center. And this was more of not much an active shooter as it was what would happen afterwards with the casualties, with those who were injured in the building or around the building, showing officers how to stop profuse bleeding immediately, how to use the tourniquets, how to use gauze and things like that. So that's mostly what that training was for.
Oh, so did this what was the date of this? This must have been it must have been the week before the 5th, so it must have been the week before the shooting took place downtown, right?
Yeah, it was, and each officer was given a kit, a trauma kit, to keep in their cars, and those exact kits were used downtown during the shooting by the officers that just received that training.
Yeah, because I remember one of the key things that Chief Winstrom said right after the shooting was that officers rushing to the scene, the many, many officers who were deployed downtown already, rushing to the scene immediately, giving life-saving treatment and tourniquets. And, you know, we did have 6 additional victims aside from the person who was shot and killed. And I can only imagine that is pretty fresh, relevant training to those officers.
Yeah, and it was just the timing couldn't have been any better with the training. So they were able to put that to use right away.
So was ECFR involved in this? Was Pensacola Fire Department involved in this? EMS? Who all was it? Just BPD in Miami or
Pensacola Fire Department was there, and also Escambia County EMS, and we sure do appreciate the help that they provided.
Yeah, that coordination between agencies is something that's so easy to forget how important, how vital that is, and how everybody in these things works so well together here locally. Very good. That's super helpful. Last thing, just a quick thing, because it's kind of come up, the e-bikes regulation, the Class 3 bikes, the ones that are, and now we're not talking about the ones that are actually illegal for either individuals and certainly juveniles to drive. We're talking about ones that would otherwise be legal, but they maybe need some regulation. What are you guys looking at with that? What's the problem you're trying to solve?
Well, we just want mostly the young folks to understand how fast those go. The stopping distance changes dramatically from the bicycle that they're used to. and to be safe on them. And the parents make sure that they wear helmets and explain to them the differences between a bicycle and an e-bike. Also, the rules of the road that apply to them just as it does to motorcycles and vehicles. So the parks is where we've been having some problems with them riding in places in parks where they don't need to be and riding a little bit too fast for the pedestrians that are present.
Very good. And, you know, I know Gulf Breeze is dealing with this as well. And one of the things that they like to say, which is just true, is there's a lot of vehicles that are for sale that you might think you do not need to have, you know, licensed, registered, be a licensed driver to operate. But a lot of these faster e-bikes are exactly in that category. And driving them around without a license, without registration, without headlights, and all the rest that goes with a motorcycle is illegal on its face, regardless of whether you're an adult or a minor, right?
Yeah, and just like with computers and software, these e-bikes are developed and put out on the road, and then eventually the laws and ordinances have to catch up with that.
Very good. We always like to end with a did you know or a cop myth. Do you have one for me this week, Mike?
Talking earlier about national, or I heard you talking about national news organizations and the things that they say sometimes, and a national news organization said that a major athlete's home was robbed while he was away playing a ball game. So let's talk about what robbery is and what it is not. Your home was not robbed while you were away on vacation. You were not robbed if a burger is missing from your fast food order, and you were not robbed if somebody took items from your car overnight. Because robbery is a violent crime against a person involving force or intimidation, while a burglary is, or some people say you were burgled, but while a burglary is a property crime focused on entering a structure to commit a crime, often when no one is present. So your home was not robbed, it was burglarized while you were gone.
Because that is a term of law that different penalties, but yeah, it's a physical confrontation is a robbery. Just taking something when nobody else is around, that's a burglary, right?
That's correct.
So if the ham burglar came and took your fries from you by force, he'd be the ham robber.
That's correct.
See?
Yes.
We like to learn on the go. very good. Mike Wood, he is the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. As always, Mike, I appreciate the time, everything you do to keep us informed, what all your folks do to keep us safe. We'll talk to you again next week, sir.
Thank you.
Absolutely. 555 News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.
When you were 18, you spent your spring break in Cancun. The party was legendary, and you speak of it often, even though you don't remember half of it. The geeky kid who sat across from you in math class stayed home, practicing calculus. You made fun of her. A lot. That is, until last year, when you owed the IRS a lot of money and called the certified public accountants at Benakis & Associates. And she answered the phone. Who's laughing now? The number crunchers at Benakis & Associates live and breathe accounting and tax preparation. It's practically in their DNA. When you need to know what the heck a Form 656-PPV is, call Benakis & Associates. When you need a QuickBooks Pro advisor, call Benakis & Associates. When you need someone who practices long division for fun, call Benakis & Associates. Now in the historic district on 120 South Alkanes and online at flacpas.com. Benakis & Associates. Leave the numbers to the experts.
This July, America celebrates 250 years of freedom. And at Jim's Firearms, they're proud to celebrate the values that make this country strong. Freedom, responsibility, community. It's Brent Lane for Jim's Firearms. Every customer matters, whether you're purchasing your first firearm or adding to a lifetime collection. Their experienced team is there to answer your questions, earn your trust, and help you make the right choice. Jim's Firearms, backed by more than 35 years of family tradition at the corner of Sorrento Road and Blue Angel Parkway or at jimsfirearms.net.
As lead agency for our regional continuum of care, Opening Doors of Northwest Florida helps coordinate funding, data, and community planning to strengthen the local response to homelessness. Pastor Evelyn Dieterville, founder of Extra Mile Club Straight Up, Inc., has helped connect youth, families, and underserved communities to hope, opportunity, and resources. From overcoming homelessness to leading innovative programs throughout Northwest Florida, together, Club Straight Up and Opening Doors provide a voice for the homeless living in Escambia and Santa Rosa counties.
Delicious seafood is what you'll find at Davis Catfish House. David's Catfish serves only the best Mississippi catfish, fresh Gulf seafood, and delicious homemade sides. Weekday specials include two times Tuesday, six free shrimp added to the six-piece dinner. Wednesdays offer lunch basket specials. And everybody's favorite, Shrimp-tastic Thursday, $5 off all-you-can-eat shrimp. Serving fresh seafood daily. Visit David's Catfish House on Dogwood Drive in Milton. See you at David's.
Hi, this is David Williams. I'm seeking re-election to the Escambia County School Board in District 3. I worked for 35 years in the school system, where I've made a difference in students' lives, where I help increase the graduation rate, making sure our schools are safe, and ensuring our students are college and career ready. Please visit my webpage at davidwilliams3.com and view my platform for District 3. Re-elect David Williams, Escambia School Board.
Paid political ad by David Williams for Escambia County School Board District 3.
Keeping you connected to Pensacola and the world.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative. Local. Dependable.
Son, your ego is writing checks your body can't cash.
Good morning, 559 News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable. One quick follow-up. We learned from Eric Winstrom, the chief of police, yesterday that apparently, the young man that took his own life, that was involved in all of this during the warrant service, apparently was a lifelong friend or longtime friend of the young person who wound up dying. And apparently, according to Winstrom, it was a case of, you know, he was shooting and not trying to hurt his friend, trying to return fire or something. Maybe he was the one who had the multiple shots from kind of on the ground and killed his friend by mistake, is how I understood the account from yesterday. So they said their investigation is almost complete. I'm sure we'll have many more details coming up soon, perhaps more arrests as well. But just what a crazy, horrid, tragic story in the end.
Listen on air at 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3.